Our next speaker is going to give us additional food for thought. Jarrett Walker is an international consultant in public transit planning and policy, including the links between transit and all aspects of community planning and urban structure. His clients include transit authorities, cities, developers, and nonprofits. Since 2009, he has written the popular blog, humantransit.org, which has grown into an online collection of articles explaining key transit concepts and issues. In November 2011, Island Press released his book, Human Transit, How Clear Thinking About Public Transit Can Enrich Our Communities and Our Lives. Please join me in welcoming Jarrett Walker.
Ever since my book, Human Transit, came out a couple of years ago, I've been invited to many cities all over America to help communities think about public transit. And almost always when I go to one of these cities, there's a town hall event like this. And they do lots of networking, and they put the word out, and they really try to bring lots of people out who care about public transit. And I've done these kinds of talks in places like Seattle and San Francisco and Washington, D.C. and Boston. And you know what? You are the largest audience that has come out in that entire time. The most important sentence in my book, and the most important idea that's really been driving my work, especially for the last 2 years since the last 3 years since I started working on the book, is really this sentence. My job is not to make you share my values, but to help give you the tools to clarify and advocate yours. And that's important, because I'm from a green, hippie, granola-eating, weird, rainy, confusing, moldy place called Portland, Oregon. And why should you want my values here in Oklahoma? Well, maybe you do want some of them, or maybe you don't, but it's your choice. And I believe very strongly in talking about choice, talking about freedom, talking about personal responsibility. I want those to be bipartisan words that we all know how to use. So my role is to ask you some questions. And there are going to be some times tonight where it's going to sound like I'm advocating. I'm going to start sounding a little like Councilman Shadid with a sense of what we really should be doing here. But when I'm doing that, I want you to notice. I want you to listen carefully, and I want you to remember in the back of your mind what I'm telling you now, which is if I seem to advocate something, it's only because you've already heard the opposite. You don't need to hear that from me. I'm here to just open up another possibility in your minds. You still have a choice. And if you all say you want this over here, then I'm here to help you do that. That's my job. There are lots of other consultants who will come to town and tell you what you should do and what you should want. And I'm here to help you get what you want. So some of the questions I'm going to be asking tonight are about how you want to think about transit technology. Well, I'm going to ask you some questions about technology. I'm going to ask you about I'm going to present a concept called abundant access, and it's going to look like I'm an advocate of that. But there's an alternative to that, and I'm going to invite you to find your own place in that. And then I'm going to ask you about something called transit-oriented development that you may have heard of, and the question of what's a transit-friendly location, because this is where freedom connects with personal responsibility. When I'm at a party, and people don't know who I am, and they introduce themselves to me and ask me what I do, and I say, well, I'm a consultant, I work on improving public transit systems, and always, their next question is, what do I think about some technology? That is the standard cocktail party response to the topic of public transit. Oh, yeah, what do you think about monorails or streetcars or, you know, this new levitation thingy or, you know, these horizontal ski lifts that they're thinking about in Austin or whatever it is. What do you think about that? And I say, well, that depends on what you're trying to do. It depends on what problem you're trying to solve. And so the starting question is, are we sure that technology is the goal, which is what the media will tend to assume, and what so many people will tend to assume, or maybe the technology is a tool, and the goal is something else? I worked for 5 years, and I lived and worked for 5 years in Australia, which is an amazing country to live in because it feels like Oklahoma a lot of the time, except they have pretty good public transit and a lot of other interesting differences in values, even though they're all cowboys inside, just like you. And or just like you pretend to be, or just like you're presented on TV. And I spend a lot of time in a city called Melbourne. And Melbourne is famous, along with Toronto, for being the two developed world cities that never tore out their old streetcar systems, or trams, as they call them down there. And the streetcars, by the way, are big and crowded and busy and going right down the middle of things. They are major lines that run all the way across the city. But when I get on one of them, the streetcar company that runs them, when I get on one of them and look at the wall of the streetcar, I see this map. And setting aside the graphic design wisdom of yellow lines on a white background, the larger question I have this map is that this map shows me where all the trams go. Because, after all, since I'm on a tram, I must be a tram person. I must be interested in trams, right? Well, there's another possible explanation, which is that I'm on this tram because this is the thing that goes where I'm going. I may actually just want to get where I'm going. And so when you show me that, see all those lines going way up in the north and not touching each other, right? What if I want to go east-west up there? This map assumes that I'm a tram person, which means I'll be happy to ride all the way down into downtown Melbourne and all the way back up, because after all, I'm a tram person. When in fact, there are lots of east-west buses running back and forth across there, and I might want to know about those, because maybe I want to know about my public transit system, because I want to go where I want to go, rather than just knowing about one technology. It's possible. So this is question, is technology a goal or is technology a tool? And the goal is something else. And when I'm going to introduce the term abundant access, which is really the title of my next book, to capture maybe a term you might want to think about as maybe the thing you're trying to do, but again, it's your choice. But already, I can say that much, and a lot of people out there are saying, but come on, you're about to talk about buses, aren't you? You're easing us into talking about buses. You're going to try to sell us buses. But, you know, buses are for poor people. And I think Councilman Shadid has already done this part of my presentation, which is that if your infrastructure looks like it looks here, then yes, you are advertising to everyone who drives past that that's what buses are for. And you're encouraging every motorist to view people who use the bus system with, at best, pity, rather than respect. And that's a long way from being able to start breaking down the barriers to where people can start considering the possibility that the bus system might be useful to them. I'm going to say one thing quickly thing in passing here, and you can find more of it. If you're interested in this whole question of stigma around buses and how to talk about it to melt it down, Google my name along with the words bus stigma, and you'll find an article I did for The Atlantic that spends a lot more time taking that idea apart. But transit succeeds by breaking out of class categories, by not playing that game, and that means by becoming attractive to a wide range of people, although maybe not the elite. And so there's a bit of work here. Many years ago when I was presenting a transit, like the folks in Nelson and I are here tonight, I had developed a bit of a transit plan for a suburban area in Southern California, and I was presenting that to the board of the transit agency. And one of the board members leaned forward and said, "Now, Mr. Walker, if we adopt this plan of yours, will that make me leave my BMW in the driveway?" And I hope I said something polite, but the answer is obviously no, we're not trying to do that. You know what? If you have a BMW, and if you are so attached to your BMW that you needed us all to know that right now, then you're going to drive your BMW. And you know what? That's fine, because there aren't very many of you. Congratulations, Councilman. But by the very fact of being on a city council, you are part of an elite. Congratulations. But there aren't very many of you, really, in the scheme of things. And I come back to this over and over, and one of the challenges that highly successful elite people in your society need to face is that they are not the design customer. And their tastes, the kind of transit system that might make them leave their BMW in the driveway, is not necessarily what we need to aim for. What we need to aim for is something that a vast, diverse group of people, maybe not including the elite, will find useful. Right? Because if you've ridden a successful transit system, a system that is driving its city's economy, if you have ridden the London Underground or the New York City subway or even the buses in Portland, Oregon, what we have left, you'll have noticed that there's a huge diversity of people on them. And I don't just mean ethnic diversity, I mean diversity of ages, diversity of trip purposes, people doing all kinds of different things. And that's what great transit systems do. One product that appeals to this huge diversity of people. Now, when you focus, so what if you focus not on the vehicle but on what it does? What if before you choose the vehicle, you think about what you want to do in the way of transportation? Do you want to do commuter express? Do you want to do frequent local service within the city? Do you want to do rapid transit, which generally means frequent service, widely spaced stops for going long distances at high density? Do you want circulators? Well, these are all things that either a bus or a rail vehicle can do and do. The right tool will be different in different places. Like Councilman Shadid, I love rail too, and there are places where rail is right. Does this look like attractive transit to you? Does this look like civilized transit to you? It takes a moment to notice, doesn't it, that that's a bus. You have to notice the wheel wells, which the design has actually partly concealed here. This is a bus. It looks like this. It looks like this. Is this a nice station? Is that a civilized facility? It's a bus, but it's in its own lane. And because it's in its own lane, it can run reliably. If you value actual reliable operations, being in your own lane or track, but fundamentally not having stuff get in your way, is more important than whether you're on rails or tires. It matters more. See, I told you, he's a bus advocate. He's bringing this up. He keeps saying he's not, but he keeps bringing it back. No, but abundant access, broadly useful transit that lots of people find useful, arises from some specific things. Five things to remember: speed, frequency, span, reliability, and capacity. So what's transit trying, and I'll come back to those in a minute, what's transit trying to do? What is this abundant access thing I'm talking about? Well, here's a map of it. Here's a map of Portland, Oregon. And this is from a little device that walkscore.com developed but didn't really promote because they weren't sure quite what to do with it. But I think it's one of the most important online tools I've ever seen, and I'm working right now on getting it popularized and available. This is a little tool where you can plunk your pointer down on a place of interest, and these blobs, the technical word for them is isochrones, these blobs show you how far you can get on transit plus walking in 15, 30, 45 minutes. Now, we're all used to thinking about this the other way around. How long will it take me to get where I'm going? Travel time. I want you to turn the idea of travel time inside out and visualize this as a freedom. Not how long will it take me to get to work, but where could I get to in 30 minutes? Visualize that this is a map of your freedom as we experience freedom in transportation, which is how much of the riches of my city are readily available to me. If I choose to be a transit rider, or I'm a transit rider for any reason. It's a map of your freedom. And when I talk about abundant access, I'm talking about the size of these blobs, and the size of these blobs for the most people in the city. And an abundant access agenda would be an agenda that's about making these blobs bigger, and in particular, expanding them so they include more things that people value. One of the cool things about this tool is that you can make a completely selfish judgment about your own access. You can look at that and decide whether you can get to the places that matter to you. But more generally, you can aggregate this and think about, how effectively can people get to everything that's of value in their city. Now, one of the other cool things this does is it helps you take responsibility for your location decisions. Because if you're going to set up an office maybe that people are going to need to get to on transit, it matters if you locate it downtown or maybe, you know, out in the east side grid a bit, or you might choose to locate it in some leafy suburb. And that has huge consequences for your access, as it should. And we'll come back to location choice. So again, what's abundant access made of? I gave you this list before, five variables: frequency, span, speed, reliability, and capacity. Span means duration, how long it runs, whether it runs on Sunday. Does technology matter? I mean, monorails look so fast, right? Isn't that how we get speed, by buying something fast? No, actually. Here's how technology matters in delivering these abundant access outcomes. If you want to be able to run extreme frequency, if you want to be able to run every 3 minutes at 2 a.m, then you want, and you have a huge volume of people, then you want driverless rapid transit like Vancouver has. And you need some technology to get to driverlessness. You're not there. But there's a lot of interesting things happening on driverless transportation, as you know, and that may change. If you need capacity, if you need to move a huge number of people with one driver, then you need a train. But speed and reliability are just not about whether you're on rails or tires. They are about how long you stop and what can get in your way. They are about the way that you handle passenger stops, and they are about the nature of the lane in front of you and what can obstruct it and what your options are when it's obstructed. So abundant access means expanding these blobs seems like a great thing, because we're talking literally about expanding freedom, because this is what we mean by freedom in transportation. It's not about transportation at all. It's about access to your city. It's about the sense that you can live in Oklahoma City and have access to Oklahoma City instead of being in any sense trapped. The opposite of this is a sensation of being trapped, not being able to move. I want to point out, now I want to talk a little bit provocatively about something called symbolic transit. Symbolic transit, which is a thing that conflicts often with abundant access, arises from the idea that we need to represent abundant access so that people will recognize it, and that sometimes we actually sacrifice some abundant access in order to create something that looks like it or that makes people emotionally respond in a particular way. And a very simple mathematical example is what happens when you separate the two directions of a transit line and start moving them apart from each other. I have heard several times, and I've read several times, among people who believe that the role of a rail project is to generate development, and who believe that the relationship is in some sense that we put rails in the street and buildings sprout in response. And by the way, that's not what happened in Portland. You go to Portland now and it looks like that would happen, but what happened in Portland was that the same people designed the streetcar and the development at the same time, and they were all at the same table, and as the councilor mentioned, there was also a lot more financial involvement. But you can't look at Portland's experience and say that that proves a cause and effect relationship between the rails and the development, because it all happened at once by the same people. But I want to make a different, simpler point, which applies to any kind of transit, including buses, which is, now and then you will hear that if we move the two directions apart and put them on different streets, that will generate more goodness, because it will generate goodness on two streets instead of one. And so the further apart we move the two directions of travel, the more goodness we're generating. That kind of goodness is symbolic transit, because when you expand the symbol of service, which in this case is the rail in the street, until the streetcar comes, the rail in the street is a symbol, right? You can't ride it until the streetcar comes. So if you move it further apart, you've spread it over more area. But if you want actually to use the service, you have reduced the area that finds the service useful. And that's for one brutally obvious reason, which is that if you want transit to be useful, you need to be able to get there and get back, which means you need to be able to access both directions of the service, right? And the further the two directions of service get apart, that's what the blue area here is signaling. The further you separate the two directions of service, the smaller the area that can comfortably walk to both directions. So this is a beautiful example where the symbolism and the actuality are pointing us in opposite directions. And it's an example of a choice that you'll have to think about. And I'm not talking just about the streetcar, because this will come up in a lot of other contexts too. Abundant access is a freedom. But freedom, as we know, means responsibility. In this country, we value our freedom of choice, but we also believe in taking responsibility for the consequences of our choices. At least that's the ideal. Transit mobility is the result of your location. No matter how good your transit system is, it is going to be better or worse depending on where you are. As a result, one of the most urgent things that every city needs to do is think about where things are locating and send the right signals about where to locate. That's one of the reasons I love that tool, by the way, and I'm trying to popularize it, because that helps people make good decisions themselves or at least own the consequences of whatever decision they make. We have a lot of experience in California with making budget cuts to, where I worked for many years, making budget cuts to human services agencies. And human services agencies feel they're on the ropes, and when they open a new facility, they're under great pressure to open it as cheaply as possible, which means to find the cheapest possible land, and the cheapest possible land is hard to get to. That's how land becomes cheap, right? And so they locate back in some industrial park on some secondary or tertiary street, and then they suddenly get upset because the bus doesn't go there. And they call up the transit agency and say, "Where are you?" It's not just social service agencies that make this mistake. We used to have a lot of fun joking about the fact that it always seemed in the San Francisco area, there are laws that say that, you know, a developer, whenever he builds anything of size, needs to make a certain infrastructure contribution to public transit. And so the result of this well-intentioned law was that every development that got built, wherever it was, had a bus shelter in front of it, provided by the developer, only on his side of the street, of course. And it was though they all believed, you know, if I build a bus shelter, that means a bus will come, right? And in particular, building a bus shelter in front of your facility will not necessarily get your transit agency to do what it has to do to get to it. In this case, the transit agency was successfully bullied into doing it, but look at the sacrifice they made. The bus has to go around in a circle just in order to get to that one place. And as a result of that, everybody else who wants to get everywhere has to ride around in a circle with it. And that's having an effect on people's sense about whether this is a reasonable way to get around. So this issue about locating something that people will need to get to in a way that makes it, that, and locating it cheaply by locating in a place where it's hard to get to, is bad news. And this also goes to our personal location choices, and it's a very, very important issue, not just for senior citizens, but for future senior citizens, which include absolutely everyone in this room. The decision you make about where to live as a senior citizen is one of the clearest cases where you've got absolute freedom of choice and you're going to bear real consequences from whatever you choose, and you have to own those consequences. And if you end up living in a place where transit can't get to you, and you can yell at the transit agency forever, and you may or may not succeed in getting them to run some incredibly inefficient service to thread the labyrinth back to wherever you are, but that's not how you're going to ever feel very secure about your transit service. You're going to feel secure about your transit service if you've located in a place where transit can succeed. And so I want to talk a little bit about that and about the slogan, "Be on the Way," because this is my own definition of transit-oriented development. And there are a lot of prestigious urbanists and architects out there promoting something called transit-oriented development who haven't quite wrapped their heads around this. And so it's an important thing to keep coming back to. Transit-oriented development, or development that's intended to work with public transit has to be located not just on public transit, but on public transit that can succeed. And so you have to go back to the idea of what makes public transit successful. What makes a transit line incredibly useful to an incredible number of people so that there are lots of people on it? And the answer is, what you want is a line that feels reasonably straight. It doesn't have to be literally straight. It just has to be a reasonably direct path, not circuitous, in other words, not bending back on itself, but reasonably direct, with lots of different destinations on it that people want to go to and travel among. Not just dense housing, but, you know, a downtown, a university, a hospital. Get those things in a line. And if you haven't built them yet, build them such that they will be in a line. That's how you build a successful transit line, because people want to go back and forth in great numbers all day and all evening. And the line feels reasonably straight between any two points on the line, even if you're passing through other points on the way. That's why it's important not to slow down too much just because you're going through an acute district on the way. You have to be time competitive. The opposite of that is the cul-de-sac, but not just the little residential cul-de-sac that you're thinking about, but any time that you set yourself back from the obvious direct path. It can even just be Walmart setting itself a quarter mile back from the street that it's on, right? Or it can be any kind of prestigious facility that feels like the grand place to locate is that there should be a driveway from the street out there that goes around and up a little hill, and finally, we're way back here, right? What you're saying when you locate like that is that you want only as much transit service as you can justify all by yourself, right? If you want transit to go into whatever that cul-de-sac thing is, it thread that labyrinth that you live in to get back to you, you're saying you want only as much transit as you're going to justify by yourself. And that's probably not going to be very much. I'll tell you a funny story about this. That's also in my book. Many years ago when I was doing a transit plan for a city for a small city really in California, in the Gold Country, about 50,000 people or so, and I was out riding the buses as you do. And we were riding the bus down this main street, and it all looked fine, and suddenly we turned onto a back street. And we drove down this back street, and it felt like we were going out of town. And suddenly the sidewalks disappeared, and we had mailboxes like every quarter mile, and we were out in the forest. And finally we went down this long road and twisted back and forth, and finally down at the bottom of the road there was a cattle garden, some cattle grazing on the other side. Basic rule of transit planning, if you can see cattle from the bus, you have gone too far. And we got back there, and the bus had to actually back up and make a Y turn to get itself turned around, go all the way back up to the street, go all the way back to the main street, and that turn kept going the way it was going. And I looked at the map, and that's the bus route. It does that every hour. That's actually what it's supposed to do. And so next time I'm talking to the transit manager in this town, I say, you know, this thing over here, what's that about? I mean, and so, oh, that's Judy. She kept calling and writing letters, and finally she just kept calling the council and writing letters, and finally, you know, I wasn't going to stop until we sent the bus down there. Do you know if Judy still lives there? No. This happens inside transit agencies. And if you think your transit agency is unresponsive, sometimes they're too responsive. Everybody in town is riding down Judy's road and back and turning around in front of her cattle guard thanks to the letter she wrote. That's not abundant access. Transit's going to have to go straight, and if you want great transit to whatever you're doing, whatever you're locating, you need to be in a place where transit can run straight. That is the brilliance of your one-mile grid. You can already see and the great diagonals that go out of the city, like Classic. You can already see where those logical patterns are. Locate something between the state capitol and the medical center, and you will have good transit. That transit is permanent, not because there are rails in the street, but because there's a permanent market. There are always going to be people wanting to go back and forth there. That's how you create permanence. So, in the end, though, although I've appeared to make proposals, Every proposal I've made is simply a thing to think about, a choice for you, a thing for you to decide as a community about what kind of transit system is going to express your values. And so as I wrap up with these questions, that's what you need to remember. It's all about your choices, about what you decide as a community. Don't let anyone come in here from somewhere else and tell you what you should want. You need to figure out for yourselves what you want and how you're going to make these kinds of choices that naturally arise as we start building public transit together. Thanks very much.